Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Activity down in the Sox pen. There's the southpaw, Scott Radinsky.
AC Rad's numbers, no record, no earned run average. He's appearing in his fifth game. He has one save, working 2 2/3 innings, just one walk and two strikeouts. That's it.
Here's Junior.
Wow.
He just blew him away right there.
Go ahead, Rad. Just rear back and fire. One of the better players in all of baseball. Inside heater, as you can see, upstairs. And Ken Griffey Jr. cannot catch up with it. So one batter, one strikeout for Rad. Boy, he's been terrific. I'd say when he's on the plate, forget it.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sunday mornings on The Score.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. It is indeed Hit and Run, The Score's venerable baseball show on Sunday mornings. It's hosted by me solo for the last couple of years. But lots of different guest hosts, guest co-hosts have come on. And if Scott Radinsky were ever in town, I'd want him to come in and talk for a while. If he could, we will accept the phone call happily, willingly, right now. And I've been looking forward to talking to you for a long time, Scott Radinsky. So thanks so much for coming in on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning to you. Happy Mother's Day to your wife and mother of your children and anybody else who deserves it around your world. How's it going, Scott?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me. Good morning to all you guys. And hey, that was awesome. I haven't heard Hawk and Wimpy talk together in a long time. That was really cool.
Yeah, it's right. Well, you know, your teams were so much damn fun. I hope they were fun from the inside. I have to assume that they were. But like some incredibly talented, highly drafted people, along with some gamers who all made that made those teams really, really fun. You have good memories of sharing a locker room with Ventura and Frank and Thigpen and McDowell and all those guys.
Probably some of the best times of my life, you know, being that young and in the city of Chicago, which for me was my first experience. My locker was next to Pudge, so I was next to a Hall of Famer for a few years there, and I had Charlie Huff on one side. And, you know, like you said, the success they had in the organization with their picks with Jack and Frank and Alex and Robin, you know, in a four consecutive year run there where everybody got to the big leagues, and it was a pretty good nucleus of a team, and you threw in a few extras of us, you know, the rest of us, and it was a good group of guys, man. It was a special team, and it was a lot of fun.
I'm 19 blocks from the ballpark, Scott. I love living near the park. There are times where I'll hear the fireworks. If I'm not watching the game, I'll hear the fireworks. I know somebody homered, and I can flip over to the game in time to catch the home run in a little bit of delay, you know. I've ridden a divvy bike there many times. You used to ride your bike to the ballpark when you were a player sometimes, right? From where? Where were you riding from?
I was living, for the most part, I was living downtown Lincoln Park area, somewhere in the city. And, you know, I would ride down State Street. I'd end up coming down through Chinatown. I think the neighborhood's a little nicer now.
Yes.
From my recent visits there, it seems like it's, cleaned up a little bit, but it was a little sketchy riding down there when I first started doing it. I know there was a lot of projects and a lot of people looked at me kind of funny, like, what are you doing? And I just pedaled down the street as fast as I could, put my head down and get to the ballpark. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this town is a lot more bike friendly. This town's a lot more bike friendly now. They've got a lot of, like, you know, well carved out bike routes and stuff. But at the time, they were, yeah, like, you were an interloper on a lot of those streets. Did you ever go up and down the lakefront? Did you ever think about doing it that way?
That was my main. Well, not going south, but going north. I mean, I spent probably 50% of my total time in Chicago, just pedaling up the lakefront all the way up to probably Addison, maybe a little further north sometimes, and then cut over and ride down Clark Street or Wells or something, and just come back to my apartment where I was staying. But you know, when I first got to Chicago, I didn't drive for the first couple of years, so I just rode a bike. And at the time, the city was full of these bike messengers just pedaling around the streets everywhere. So I'd start following these guys all around through little alleys, and I kind of learned, you know, I learned my way of the land by these bike messengers in downtown, which was pretty cool. So I had every shortcut and, you know, less trafficked streets. It was a pretty good experience.
You know, I had some friends who were bike messengers at the time, and they were insane. They were crazy because...
Absolutely crazy.
Right? Because you had to be so completely bold and fearless to be out there riding, like, oh, I got hit by another car today. That's okay. I'm all right. I wonder, I mean, you as a singer, as a lead singer, as a punk guy, as a somebody who kind of understands the punk aesthetic, the punk attitude, could you kind of just describe that aesthetic and attitude for people a little bit? Like what that is that you grew up kind of embracing and feeling and how, you know, some of those guys had it. I remember dealing with some of those guys and they had some of that.
Yeah, very, very similar. You know, just kind of, I guess, not afraid to live life and doing your thing as you want to do it without really conforming to, I never really worried about fitting in, you know, in a certain dress code or a certain way into society. Not that I was a rebel or consciously went out of my way to be different. It's just, I felt comfortable in who I was in my own skin and how I wanted to be. And if it didn't, you know, if it didn't kind of fit with society at the time, then I was kind of looked at as an outcast. I think over time, over the years, I think the world kind of caught up to that fashion and that culture and obviously the music, and it became popular. It was kind of like something that drove me personally just to kind of be myself, I guess. I don't want to say that anarchy type mindset, but it, you know, it was just kind of just be yourself and be free and don't worry about what other people think. And that was kind of really, was really what I lived, was not really concerned about what people viewed me.
So how does that fit into a baseball universe as a player? Was it at odds with the priorities of being a baseball player at times?
Well, you know, being part of a team I enjoyed being part of a team. And when I put on my baseball uniform, I don't want to necessarily say I played the game, but I got along with all my teammates. But I was able to be myself. And one thing I learned about baseball early on was if you do your job on the field and you do what you're supposed to do and you have respect for the game, you can do whatever you want to do. No one's going to say anything to you about growing your hair out or growing a beard or doing whatever you want to do. And just get the job done and get along with people. And when the game's over, everybody kind of goes their own way anyway. And I was myself away from the field. So it was never an issue for me playing baseball.
Yeah. You know, that feeling of being on a team, I've always, you know, I'm a baseball guy, you know, sports talk show host, whatever, but I'm also a singer and a band leader and been in music my whole life too. So it's like, I'm always trying to make the parallel between a band and a ball club. And maybe, and some people rebuff it, like it just doesn't quite fit because baseball is so individual, right? It's like there's a lot of times where you don't have to think about your teammates like you do your bandmates, right? But is there sometimes that it does feel, that it has felt similar to you? I'm wondering, you know, how that feels in terms of a band and a team, teammates and bandmates.
Well, I think there's a lot of different similarities, if that makes sense. you know, you are kind of taking care of your own backyard in the baseball field and doing your own thing. And when everybody contributes and all 25 guys are pulling on the same side of the rope, you know, that's when you have those successful teams and those good years, that good camaraderie, the chemistry, everything they talk about.
Yeah.
You know, in a band, it's very similar where, you know, each guy's has a responsibility to contribute towards what we're doing as far as either recording or writing or playing live. And you want to hold your, you know, you want to pull your weight. So, you know, but in a sense, the different side of it is, you know, I think you choose who you want to play music with and who you want to express your art with. Baseball,
yeah,
you don't really have that choice. You're kind of thrown together in a big pot, and you're not necessarily forced to get along or figure it out, but it just naturally kind of happens organically. Where musically, it's a little different brotherhood, and a lot of baseball teams grow into that over the course of a season. And like I said, those are the good ones. So there are a lot of similarities, yet a lot of differences.
No, I like. Of course, yeah, you're choosing your tribe, you know. Yeah. But you need your band members to be teammates. You need the bass player to know the tunes and show up and be there for the chorus at the same time you get there. As a pitcher, who were you most bonded with? Was it a specific catcher? Was it the bullpen catcher for you, or a bullpen coach? And you became a bullpen coach later on in life too. I'm wondering what the connection was that felt most like it.
I think being a reliever, the bullpen was always, you know, kind of your tribe that you gravitated to, whether it was hanging out during batting practice or if you're going to go eat lunch with somebody. You know, certainly the relievers were kind of our own group, but I definitely don't think there's the most special relationship on the field for me is the pitcher catcher relationship and the bond. And when you have a really good catcher, you know, coming from a pitcher's perspective, when you have a really good catcher who's there for you and understands each individual and kind of what makes you tick and knows how to say things to you and kind of coach you along throughout the course of a year or in a situation on the mound, you know, at the moment, that's pretty special when you know they're really genuinely there for you. You know, I've played with some catchers that are more offensively minded and their focus was they might have taken at bats behind the plate with them if they had just failed the previous inning. And then I've had some catchers that were just, you knew they were back there for you. And when you know a catcher's back there for you, it really helps. And I think it just makes your job so much easier and so much trust and less thought put into what you're doing. And you can just really go out and compete.
What is what's more satisfying, Scott Radinsky, finishing a super tight 3-minute rager with a band and getting that moment of satisfaction and the loud explosion from a crowd, or striking out a tough lefty in the eighth after like a high pressure at bat and getting that satisfied cheer from a home crowd? Which one is more satisfying?
Well, I'm not going to choose either one. I've been asked this question a million times. Or what do you know, baseball and music? Let me put it to you this way. You strike a guy out to end the inning and you come in a dugout and there's, you know, 25 guys and trainers and strength coaches and everybody, the bat boys, and everybody's wanting to high five you. It's a pretty big high. You know, playing a gig, we played a gig in Ljubljana, Slovenia last year, a big festival in front of 10,000 people. And, you know, the 1,000 people up front are singing word for word. So it's the same high. It's just different. It's they're both equally as gratifying and very special.
All right. So Pulley, obviously right now, nobody's out there playing. It's really weird. I don't know what the live music world is going to look like anytime soon. But when we get back to normal, you're still out there playing. How often have you guys been active of late before all this stuff has gone down?
I mean, we've been active for 30 plus years. I think the last
Amazing.
Year or so that I haven't been involved in baseball, it's been a little more. And we were going to we were headed to Europe on Tuesday to start a tour of Europe and Canada for a couple of weeks. Which obviously is postponed. And, but yeah, I mean, we whenever we can, we try to do what we can do. And, you know, the other guys do have day jobs, but they're pretty flexible. Mm. And, and, unfortunately for us, you know, we're not rock stars by no means, but you know, we've been playing for a while, and we do have a little niche in certain markets, and we have the ability to go and play some pretty fun shows and make it worth our while. And you know, we do as much as we can, whatever we can, we do.
Yeah. That's awesome. Scott Radinsky with us for another couple minutes here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. What do you miss right now about baseball being gone, Scott? I know it's more unique for you since you were in the game for so long and haven't been, obviously, for, as you mentioned, a year and a half. But what do you miss about the game being gone right now and not even on our TVs or in our box scores or in our highlight packages?
I think in each market, you know, being out here in LA, I know I have a lot of friends who are Dodger fans, and they just miss that day to day. You know, did we win? Did we lose? You know that over the course of the season, I get a kick out of listening to people, you know, as the you know, couch manager type thing, second guessing all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, for me personally, I was helping coach in a high school team. I had some stuff lined up with USA Baseball again this year that I was looking forward to. So to lose. You know, to lose the day-to-day competitiveness is I think what people probably miss the most, is being able to follow your team, having something to root for, follow your guys on a daily basis, and you know that's what we all miss.
Hmm. As a coach, Scott, what have you learned about pitching that you wish you knew as a pitcher?
Oh, everything. I mean, when I was playing, I don't want to say clueless, but just trying to keep myself away from everything and just kind of not think too much. You know, as a coach, when you're responsible for, you know, your staff of 12 guys, you're in every pitch. You've got 12 different personalities. I really enjoyed coaching, and I learned a lot on as an observer when not to panic, when to maybe push yourself a little more, and being able to, you know, I do think the experience of having done it certainly has helped certain times in the course of the season, maybe June, July, when I had to put my arm around a guy and kind of pick him up, or maybe in April and, you know, kind of push a guy along with my foot a little bit, you know, to get him going. But knowing and having that feel of when to push the button. And I was fortunate to have some pretty good people around me as a coach or as a player, you know, that were former coaches that were former players that were kind of taught me and brought me along and allowed me to just go out and play and think freely. And I think as a coach, that's what my biggest goal was, is trying to replicate that for a player that was given to me. But, you know, as far as all the analytics and situational stuff, I didn't think about when I was a player. I catcher put the sign down and shook my head and I threw the pitch. As a coach, there's a lot more thought that went into it. And I don't know if that would have made me better as a player, knowing what I know now. But it certainly helps me. I'm in a better position to help teach it. I know that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You might not have been the kind of player that benefited from it, right? I'm sure you've had players as a coach where it can be too much and they get lost up in there and then they have trouble executing, right? It's not for everybody.
Absolutely. You know, that's the biggest challenge as a coach, is the ability to, like I said, to know who you can bring in the video room, to know who you got to keep away from there, to know who you can give a scouting report to, you know, vice versa. And that's the biggest challenge, because you want to help everybody, but sometimes you're helping them more by just kind of letting them do their thing and leaving them alone and maybe waiting for the right time when it's really needed. It's a lot of catch.
Who's better at maintaining old friendships and relationships, Scott? Punk musicians or ball players? Who's better at staying in touch?
Yeah, I mean, I've made a lot of friends in baseball that I keep in touch with, and you know, a lot of friends in music that I keep in touch with. I think musically, it's more when I see them crossing paths. You know, when I was actively in baseball, or when I'm around a baseball field, and I, you know, even now when I see scouts or people that are hanging around the field, or like this USA program I was in was was amazing, to be around on a daily basis. Guys like Scott Brosius, Chipper Jones, Derek Jeter, Andy Pettit. I mean, working side by side with them on a daily basis was really cool. So there's always, there's bombs in both. But I don't know if me personally, I've ever been the guy to, on a daily basis reach out. But I've always been friendly and keep in touch, whether it's shooting somebody a text or something. But I'd say equal, equally the same.
Yeah. Yeah, see, here I am trying to put people in groups, and that's just not how it works. Spiegel, shut up. That's just not how it works. No, I hear you. Scott, it's been a pleasure. I last thing, I can only imagine what Ozzie Guillen is like when there's even less of a filter that he carries around in his regular life as it is. All my interactions with Ozzie, and some on air, some off air, it's like it is so much fun to have a guy who just usually just really, really doesn't seem to care what anybody's going to think of what he has to say. You are married to his wife's sister, or he's married to your wife's sister. However, that is what is Ozzie like with even less of a filter than we know about?
I think the side we see of him is just this character, this out of life type character, and always going and funny. He's a super family guy, very caring person. I've been very fortunate to be places and see him behind the scenes, as you might want to say, with family and just the way he is. He is what he is. He is what you see. He doesn't hold anything back. And he's genuinely a pretty damn humorous person. He's I don't want to say he's a comedian, but he's definitely a punk rocker. There's no doubt about it. He's full throttle, and he wears it all on his sleeve. And he's a good person. He's a genuine person. But he's behind the scenes, there's a good man side to him too that maybe a lot of people don't see, the family side and how caring he is, and how he is with his own children, and now his grandchildren and his wife and the other family members, and what he does for people. He's so generous, and he does so much for so many people that maybe aren't as privileged as him, and he's helped so many people that it's probably never gone publicized, but publicly that he doesn't brag about stuff like that, but he's he's a good man. I'll say that. He's a good, funny man.
That's beautiful. That's family right there. Talking about family. Scott, this has been fun. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. Stay healthy and enjoy playing and enjoy coaching. And I hope that these careers of nonsense that we have here. I hope nonsense comes back to the world here. We need it to come back. I think a lot of people.
Yeah. Me too, man. Hope everybody stays safe, and baseball can't come back soon enough.
Yep. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it very much. That's Scott Radinsky, the former White Sox pitcher, Dodgers pitcher, and well-established punk rock lead singer and Ozzie Guillen family member. That was fun.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.